The big question, and this changes for everyone, is why do you buy a wine? And do you know where that wine actually comes from?
As I like to say, there's life after Cabernet Sauvignon.
The most expensive wine in the world is a Bloody Merlot. Why can't we be in that group? We can be.
It is important to adapt your rootstock to the location where you are and what you want to grow.
There's a moment in a red wine fermentation where it gets really foamy, froths up in your face, and it smells amazing. I think that's my favorite part.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 298. This week we feature Wally Maurer of Domaine Berrien Cellars in Berrien Springs, Michigan. In November, we embarked on a four-day tour of Michigan wineries, which proved to be eye-opening. If wine fans have one thing in common, other than wine, they love to turn their friends onto different wines and wineries. So we say, checking out Michigan wine is well worth the time. We traveled up the western border of the state, which is, of course, the east coast of Lake Michigan. This series begins with a guy whose passion for the grape glows from his face as he speaks. Wally Maurer is the owner and winemaker of Domaine Berrien Cellars in Berrien Springs, Michigan. We caught up with Wally at the winery as he finished up with the last of the grapes from harvest. The thing is, Wally is the kind of winemaker you want wine lovers to meet. It's in his blood, and he'll tell you why. We're here in, I believe it's Berrien Springs, is that right?
Yep, Berrien Springs, Michigan.
Great, and we're here with Wally Maurer, and you are the owner of Domaine Berrien Cellars, correct?
That is correct.
I'm glad I got that part right. It's helpful, isn't it?
It's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. So we've dragged you away from Crush right now, is that right?
Well, right now we're just pressing our last red, our Cabernet Franc. It's been in the tank 20 days now on its skins, and it's time to get it off the skins and press it, and then we'll put that juice in another tank. Let it set for, 10, 14 days to clarify, finish its malolactic fermentation, and then we'll start getting it prepared for barrels.
Is this the end of it then? Is that the last you have your
That is the last, it's another milestone as being a winemaker, and it's kind of fun to have, we can put the press away for the year and all the equipment associated with it.
He says that with a big smile, folks.
Right, right. And there's still a lot of deer season left, so I'm excited.
So you can get out, actually.
Right.
Wow. Well, and today, of course, it gets that much more interesting because we have snow dripping from your back roof.
Yeah, the first snow of the year.
Yeah, and it wasn't a bad snow at that, actually.
So, not too bad.
Yeah, we survived that. So let's go back a little bit and find out about you. First of all, I guess, when did you open up the winery here?
Well, it was sort of a multi-tier effort. We bought the property in 1992. My wife Katie's father, Tom Fricke, we were home winemakers, and we realized that we needed to control our own raw material. We were making pretty good wines from other people's grapes, but in order to step up to the next level, kind of where our palates were going, we needed to control the fruit. So we bought this piece of property in 1992. It was an 80-acre tart cherry farm. And we started taking out the tart cherries and putting in some of the more fragile European noble grape varieties. And kind of at that time, that was still a little bit pioneering for some of the varieties that are becoming oh so common now in Michigan.
Well, let's go back a little bit just about your own history with wine. Have you been a big wine lover most of your life, or is this something just you kind of melded into? How did that happen?
Until I met Tom, Katie's father, MD 2020 was my wine of choice. And I missed as a young man because my parents had quite a collection of some of the old 70s Napa Valley stuff. And if I had only known, I would have got my hot hands into that in high school because we were able to drink in high school.
Oh, there you go.
Wow. The good old days.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, back to your question you said earlier, we opened finally to the public for the winery in 2001. So it took a while to start to get our vineyards going. We had regular day jobs. We kind of did this on the weekends, on holidays. It was more a hobby up until 2001, where we decided to cash in our corporate jobs and give it a go. The wines that we were making were tasting pretty darn good, and we just needed to see if we could share them with other people, if they would find the beauty in them, and of course give us their money for them. And that was the true test.
How scary was that for you?
It was pretty scary. But the way I looked at it, I was still in the middle of my lifetime, I guess. And what's the worst case scenario? I can go back to my cubicle, go back to traveling, go back and do what I went to school to do. But there was never a better opportunity than to get the vineyard going at that time. And at that time, Michigan wine was still just an emerging market. I mean, it's still an emerging market. But at that time, we were really ramping up. Michigan wine was getting traction. We as an industry were making better and better wines, and now we were making them from the grape varieties that people wanted to drink. The 28 million people that are associated with Chicago, Detroit, and Indianapolis that are all one-tank trips that all come in and visit us and drink our wine and buy our wines.
Yeah. What did you do? What was your day job?
I was a purchasing manager for a private utility company. We operated in 26 states, and our headquarters was in the suburbs of Chicago.
So a classic beginner for a winemaker, right? That's exactly what you would go into, logically.
Right.
Completely different. So you're from Chicago originally?
I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio.
Now, I'm assuming while we're talking about this, you're an estate winery, correct?
Yes, we're very proud. We're 100% estate. We've never bought or brought grapes in from outside. We grow everything, make everything, and bottle everything. A little fun thing we like to say is the grapes never leave my property unless they go home with you.
So I think what's really cool about what you're doing here is that you're working with vinifera. That sounds like that was your passion. You wanted to make this nothing but the varietals that people are going to want to drink
right.
And care about wine.
Right.
A big risk to do that maybe in this part of the country. Tell me about that.
Well, it is a big risk in the Midwest growing these fragile noble grape varieties, these vinifera grape cultivars. However, as we become more experienced wine growers, we're able to do some things. I don't want to say defeat Mother Nature. It's more able to work with Mother Nature with these varieties. And in harmony. And so there's some techniques that we have to do that people in the West Coast do not have to do, but we're willing to do that to have the opportunity to grow things like Syrah and Viognier and Merlot and some of these more tender, winter tender grape varieties. However, we didn't go into it completely naive. Our vineyards here are on the highest point in the county. I'm 4 miles off Lake Michigan. My vineyards are all south-facing slopes. I drop a little over 40 feet from front to back. I have 4 accredited soils on the property that are all conducive to wine grape growing. And Lake Michigan doesn't freeze over. So this little anomaly, maybe 4, some people say 8 miles, but I've seen it doesn't quite get 8. This little anomaly is the reason why we can do this. And it's not just wine grapes, which I'm excited enough about. We are the fruit belt. Berrien County, Michigan is one of the most diverse fruit growing counties outside of Orange County, California.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So I'm thinking grapes and wine grapes, but let's get into strawberries and peaches and the tree fruits and blueberries and things like that. But it has been the fruit basket for Chicago since the Depression. And so it's very important what we're doing here in the soils and the lake moderate our climate that allow us a little bit more the opportunity to do it. Again, working with Mother Nature as opposed to against her.
Yeah, no fighting it. Yeah.
Right.
Is this an AVA area at all?
Yes. This American viticultural area here, an AVA, is called the Lake Michigan Shore. And it encompasses 21 wineries that are part of our wine trail. And it extends from the Indiana border on the western edge, kind of the Michigan City area of Lake Michigan, and it extends up to the Kalamazoo River north of us here in Saugatuck. And then, of course, it extends out to Pawpaw, back down to Indiana, and that encompasses these nice moraines that the glaciers left for us, these knolls, these great soils. And again, the further away from the lake you get, it gets a little bit more dicey for, You know, winter, yes, we can do things to help with that, but more importantly, spring frost. You know, we can't mound up snow over the vines in April. You know, it's already, we're kind of at Mother Nature's mercy.
Well, I'm a little curious about this year. I know in certain parts of the country, people were a little closer to normal. I know for the last few years, many people have been picking earlier. What about you this year?
Yes, it was another early year. We picked almost some of the same days that we picked in our 2017, last year's vintage. And I guess what I'm hearing you say is that with this global warming and these different changes in the climate, are we picking earlier? Yes, we are getting hotter. But what we're really seeing is more swings, more, you know, we're getting heat, which is great. But like this year in the 2018 vintage, we had a heck of a lot more rain, a lot more moisture, and a lot more other challenging environmental things in the vineyard. It was great that we had the heat, but you start to forget about that when you're battling the moisture and trying to keep leaves dry and keep your fruit open to the sun and the air and keep everything nice and clean for this nice, hot, long growing season. But yes, we've been picking a little earlier, but you know, that's cool. More time in the stand.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just funny. I think about picking here again. This is what, November 10th-ish? I'm not quite sure what the date is. To see the snow on the ground, I mean, unlike a lot of other areas, again, warmer climates, your grapes tell you when it's time to pick, but here you really got to pick because there's always that threat of snow, right?
Right, right. But really up until yesterday morning when we were cold again, I still had all my leaf structure on my front vineyard.
Really? Wow.
So last year when I picked, or 2 years ago in 2016, I picked my reds in the first week of November. And that's sort of like now.
Yeah, right.
And we can hold the leaves. I mean, this is, if this doesn't show you the lake effect that we have here, then nothing will. But all you need is a little bit of cold air to blow in off that lake. That same air that blows in off the lake is what keeps us a little cooler during the growing season. It's also what helps us have the diurnal shift in the fall to get the warm days and the cool nights to really round out the flavors of the fruit for the wine and really let that wine shine.
One thing about winemakers is, you know.
Only one thing?
Yeah, only one thing. Other than being a retailer, wholesaler, craftsman, and all that kind of thing, you're also part weatherman. I mean, really, are you one of those kind of guys who's really focused on the weather as well?
Yeah, we look at a lot of different reports and we try to make our head. I mean, it's really, I mean, you watch the news at night, it's all guess, right? So we try to take the information that we hear from trusted sources and then kind of put it through our own filter and make some of our own guesses. And probably the most important guess that we make that we have to work with is we bring in a very conservative crop load in order to get the phenolic ripeness of a lot of these grapes we're growing, you know, kind of outside of their zip code.
Mm-hmm.
We have to watch our crop load very carefully. So we practice something called a green harvest that happens in July. That's halfway through the growing season. We'll go out and drop 40, 50% of the fruit that's there to the ground. So the remaining clusters can be riper later in September. And that's when you really have to kind of hedge your bet because you don't have a crystal ball and you don't know what the rest of July and August and September are going to do. But what you do know is that you're halfway and either you can make it or you're not going to make it at all. And it really helps us make our crop load proper.
And that's another part of the scary process because you're predicting the future without having a crystal ball. So what do you think about 18 at this point, now that you've got everything in?
18 was an 18-round knockdown, drag-out fight that went to split decision. We won. I have the belt. Some of my friends can't say that. This was a very challenging year, not with the heat. We had a little bit more heat than we had in 17, another great vintage. It was the moisture and the wet. Those that had 13, 14 sprays on, those that had timely leaf removal, those that were meticulous about their vineyards, they won. The ones that were a little bit more not like that, they had a little bit more of a struggle towards a later season. We started picking early. We started picking this year in the 2018 crop on September 12th. There wasn't a lot of picking going on in our area. And we, again, played weatherman. We look forward at long range. We saw water coming within 10 days. And we got a good half or more of our crop off before the rain started to come in. So at probably the driest point those grapes were ever going to be, we were able to get in into the vat and get a really good concentration of flavors on the fruit.
So it's really all about your years of experience. I mean, it isn't a crystal ball. It's not. It's just that gut feeling as well as your own mathematics, I imagine, right?
And something I learned as a very young winemaker was that winemakers can make alcohol from anything. The key is making something that, first of all, reflects the varietal character of the grape that you're making it, also with no flaws, also with flavor. And interesting, somebody wants to drink it, okay? We can do that with a lot of lotions, potions, and things off the shelf. One thing that I have yet to find in a winemaking catalog was the jar that's called flavor. And that's something that we do, my peers do, diligently is tasting that fruit in the vineyard, watching the skins mature, looking at the seeds for maturity, and then going out and using chemistries really as a secondary decision to pick. And this year in 2018, we had great flavors. We had great skin maturity. We had some different type chemistries I haven't seen in many years. I'm still glad we picked. And we have some great wines in the tank that will reflect the 18.
Good. I hope you have a good 18 when it comes to sales as well. How many cases are you making here?
We have 40 acres of grapevines, 21 different varieties. We keep about two-thirds of that production for ourselves. We make anywhere from 4,000 to 5,000 cases. We don't make all the wine just for ourselves. We have a lot of partnerships with some area breweries, some other smaller wineries. We're making some juice for them, help them get going. And then we sell quite a bit of our fruit to my peers in Michigan in the industry.
Which helps pay the bills.
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk about the wines themselves. I was looking through your varietals and you've got some impressive stuff here. So could you just walk through what you make here?
We make a lot of wine. The way I like to tell people is my love is red wines and dry wines. However, I have a lot of people that are in different stages of their wine journey that come and see me here. And they have a great time, and my staff is incredibly hospitable, and I want them just to have the best time ever when they're here in Michigan. And so what I learned is that I better have a wine they like. So I make a little of everything, and kind of our pun is I have a shoe for every Cinderella. I might only have one or two, but I'll have one. Again, to have a great time when they visit us here in Michigan and then not have a wine that they can take home didn't make sense. So we've made some little bit sweeter style wines in the recent years. We have some more fun wines, but our love is our dry wines, specifically our dry reds, which is probably 3/4 of my production. And varieties like, we were the first winery to vinify Syrah in Michigan.
Yeah, that's surprising.
It's part of our Rhone profile. We're also one of two Rhone Rangers this side of the Mississippi. And I'm very proud to be a Rhone Ranger. We grow Marsan.
I noticed that. Roussan, that's not real common around here. Yeah.
Viognier, along with the Syrah. Nice. And then we have the five varieties from Bordeaux. Merlot, Cab Franc, Cab Sav, Malbec, Petit Verdot. And then we have some of the more traditional Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Pinot Grigio blend, and then some of the old grapes from the way old days when we first started, some hybrids, Dejanac and Choix, that are really, really obscure. We've been making wine from that since the 70s, our first vintages of that blend. So it's a little more a tradition we keep it on. It's called our Wolf's Prairie Red or our Grandma's Red. Just a fun red table wine from a couple of real obscure, French-American hybrids.
How long have you actually then been making wine? Because you didn't say anything about the 70s before, so.
Well, I was a little young then, a lot young then. Yeah. I'd like to say I'm second-generation winemaker. I learned from Katie's dad, Tom. And when I met him in the late 80s, when I met his daughter, that's when I discovered wine that wasn't in a screw-off bottle. And I thought this was the greatest thing ever. Food and wine, it comes from the plant outside. This is as close to free as you can get. And as a young kid, that was really important. Good things made you feel good that were low cost. And the one thing led to another. We started experimenting with more varieties, drinking wines from all over the world. Our palates greatly accelerated up into wanting great wine. And now our winemaking had to follow suit. And that's what kind of started this whole thing.
Are your wines ageable?
I'm very proud to say yes. And I'm not just saying this. This isn't marketing and production. I maintain an extensive library of my original vintages. I share them with my constituents, my wine club. We do a couple verticals a year where we'll taste through 7 years. My wines are age-worthy. But what makes me the most excited, I love this question when people ask, is that they're drinkable now. I can pour this young wine for you that's age-worthy, that will be magical 5-6 years down the road, but I will show you its beauty when it's still in its diapers, and you will fall in love with it now. And if it makes it 5 or 6 years, now it's magical. So that's really the, you can make age-worthy wines. The question is, you don't want to age them 6 years before you get to share them. They have to have beauty while they're still 24 months young.
You are a classic wine lover, sir. So, considering like the time you've been doing this, what's the question, and you said before, you've done more than your share of interviews, but what's the question you don't get asked that you'd like to be asked? And you can think about that for a minute. I mean, you already just talked about ageability, and maybe that's the one.
I don't know. I guess I have to, well, I could probably think of a bunch. I'll probably think of them later, but one that comes to my mind, and it's so apropos to what we're doing here, but Michigan, Southwest Michigan specifically, our terroir, the hills, Mother Nature. The fact that we can do this here just is so super awesome. And again, we're outside of the right zip codes.
Yeah.
And we can do it. And not only Michigan, but all of us, my friends up north, my friends that are a little more to the east, you know, we're growing things that our friends in Ohio, Illinois, Indiana can't do. This big body of water, Lake Michigan, it has so much love to give us. It can give us her wrath too. But what we can do here is really awesome, you know, without having to be in a West Coast area. And that's probably the coolest part that people don't realize. They think grapes grow everywhere. You know, it's they just grow. And they don't quite realize, and nor should they sweat the small details of how Mother Nature could take everything from you very quickly.
Right. Well, that's part of the reason why I'm here. Let you tell that story. Obviously, you have a beautiful tasting room, very nice little area here. I'm assuming it's not by appointment. Can people just stop by, or do they need to make an appointment?
Oh, no. We see guests every day, noon to 5, except during January, February, and March. We're open just Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, noon to 5. Close your typical holidays, New Year's, Christmas.
And I assume you have a website where people can contact you, and that is?
Check out our Facebook, our website, domainbarion.com. Like us on Facebook. We put a lot of great educational information out there about grapes in general and things that are going on, and it's good to be in the know.
Cool. I know you're real busy today, so I appreciate you taking the time. Wally, this was a real pleasure.
Yep, thank you. Really good.
Learn more by visiting domainbarion.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2018.